Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Arun Venugopal. In India, mob killings of Muslim and other Indian minority groups have been on the rise since Prime Minister Modi and his Bharatiya Janata Party took power in 2014.
Basically, what it is, is people, usually a bunch of men, beating another man to death on the streets.
That's Meenakshi Ganguly, South Asia director at Human Rights Watch. Celebrities and intellectuals across the country have called for Prime Minister Modi to stop these mob killings, now being called lynchings in India. But in many cases, party members and local officials have not simply turned a blind eye to the violence, they've actually encouraged it. I asked Meenakshi to explain this growing problem, starting with exactly who is carrying out these attacks and why.
That is happening right now over the last few years because of a political campaign that started out claiming that not enough was being done to protect the cow, which many Hindus hold sacred. And what was a political campaign, what was an election campaign, translated and for some reason was picked up by supporters of the BJP.
The ruling party of the Prime Minister.
That's right. So when the Prime Minister was campaigning, he talked about a pink revolution and the need to protect cows. But once he becomes Prime Minister, then he becomes Prime Minister of all of India. However, the messaging, because the campaign was so much to do with Hindu nationalism, that Hindu nationalist supporter took it upon themselves to act out on what they felt was a big challenge for the majority Hindu in India, and decided that they must punish. They must act and they must punish. So they have cow protection groups, and they would be on the highways stopping trucks carrying cattle, and they would force the person out of the truck, insist that it was illegal trade, and beat people to death. It's really, really shocking.
Now, Human Rights Watch put out a report earlier this year on this phenomenon. Give me some sense of the numbers. How widespread a problem is this?
Well, there have been a number of incidents, a large number of incidents. When we did the report, we had documented 44 cases of Muslim men who had been killed in this way. But there was after that something called a hate tracking campaign, which looked into this. And that has been shut down. It came under a lot of pressure and has now shut down. So, you know, the numbers were being, it was being run by a group called India Spend, and they were tracking these cases quite regularly, but that's now disappeared. We don't quite know why, but they did run out of funding, and presumably they did come under some sort of pressure.
This is not just Muslims who are bearing the brunt of this, correct?
Oh, no. There are Dalits, there are tribal groups. Basically, the most vulnerable.
Just to be clear, Dalits, for those who aren't familiar with that language, is what were once called untouchables. The lowest end of the caste hierarchy, correct?
That's right. And they were considered untouchable. A certain section, there are many, many sub-caste groups amongst the group that is self-identifies as Dalit. Dalit means the oppressed. For generations, these are the people that have been oppressed in India under India's caste structure. But a group of Dalit people work with leather. They also remove dead animals. And because of the jobs that they did under their caste structure, they were obviously unpopular jobs. But since they work with leather, they too have been targeted. One of the most famous cases was a case of a man called Pehlu Khan. Pehlu Khan and his sons were bringing cattle that they'd bought at a cattle fair, and they were bringing it back to their farm because they trade in cattle. It's a herding community, trading in cattle. And when he was stopped, he showed the documents that he had made a legitimate purchase. And it wasn't cattle for slaughter, it was cattle for trade. And he was beaten to death. The attack on him was also filmed. And he was alive when he was brought to hospital. So he actually also gave a police statement to the police, his dying declaration, as it's called, naming the people that attacked him. And yet a court recently acquitted these people, the attackers. And to a large part, that's because the police just did not want to pursue the investigation. So the concern really is twofold. On one side, just the fact that there is such an utter breakdown in rule of law that mob violence has become a way of, you know, interest groups expressing themselves. And that can translate into anything. You know, they've threatened movies, they've threatened books, they have tried to obstruct art. It's, you know, this threat of mob violence can often be a huge pressure point of self-censorship as well. So that's one side of it. The other side, which is more concerning, is when rule of law breaks down because people believe that they can take these actions and enforce a popular view, that the state does not act properly. And we find over and over again that the police, instead of immediately acting against the people that were the attackers, have filed cases against the victims, accusing them of illegally trading in cow in this instance, basically targeting the victim.
We've heard some statements from political leaders who have ties to the prime minister addressing the problem of lynchings. Some of them characterize them as a Western import. What do you make of this?
Today, a bunch of 20 men can get together and feel that it is fine to beat another individual, beat them, one, beat them, two, beat them so much that they die. I don't think anyone knew how to explain it. Like, how do you label it? And lynching became one of the words.
So it doesn't necessarily characterize or describe what actually happened. They don't necessarily actually lynch as we understand lynching. But this alien idea became the one thing that seemed to stick to the strangeness, the brutality of these incidents.
And the reason I find it shocking, Arun, is that for a politician to say, well, lynching is not a word, is not what they should be thinking about. They should, if they want to care about Indian culture, they should be saying, well, in Hindu culture does not permit a bunch of goons to kill another individual, or that the India that we want is an India where if there is going to be a crime, there's going to be a due process and not, you know, this kind of mob violence or mob attacks and a sort of street violence and street justice, which means that the justice system doesn't seem to be functioning.
A considerable number of Indian intellectuals and filmmakers have voiced their alarm about this ongoing problem. But their concern has provoked a sort of counter-response, hasn't it?
Yes. Well, I think that in an odd way, India is trying to identify what it wants to be. For your listeners in the US, a lot of them think of India as the big market and you know, the functioning democracy, perhaps a counter to China. That is what India has worked very hard to build for itself. And there are good reasons to celebrate those. But at this point, what is happening is similar to what we've seen in many parts of the world in recent years, a rising majority persecution narrative that politicians have picked up to try and collect votes. But when they do that, it's irresponsible because that sense of persecution then builds itself up into a sort of violence that we are seeing in the streets of India today.
Meenakshi Ganguly is the South Asia Director at Human Rights Watch. Meenakshi, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.